I want to have an exercise this morning, and then you'll figure it out as we go. I want to talk about the works of Jesus. What are the works of Jesus? Let's just tell me some of them, and I'll write them down.
Teaching.
Healing.
Teaching.
Teaching. Okay. Healing, do you have a certain one in mind? Who said healing? Did you say healing?
No.
Okay, healing. If we, you know, we could itemize a list of those, right? Healing the blind and the lame and the withered hand and the paralyzed man, the man with the palsy. We could go on and on. What else? He offered himself as a sacrifice. Boy, y'all are going to get a lesson in my spelling.
How about miracles?
Somebody, what did you say? Intercession?
Intercession.
So prayer. What was the other one?
Miracles.
And that we could make a list too, right? A long list. If we talked about turning the water into wine and what else? Give me some other examples of miracles.
Redeeming people.
Mm-hmm.
Lazarus.
Lazarus, yes. What?
I was going to say.
Okay. I mean, even so much as when he told the disciple, go catch a fish and you'll find a coin in the fish of the mouth and use that coin to pay for my tax and your tax. Is that a miracle? Of course. With the fish, they're fishing all night. They're catching nothing. Jesus says, fish on the other side of the boat. And they're like, you're a carpenter. We're fishermen. We know. Go on that side. They catch so many, they can hardly pull them in. Jesus commanded them to swarm on that side of the boat. That's a miracle. Yes?
Like discipline or correction when he turned over the tables.
Okay, yeah. How would we think about that? Yeah.
Just indignation.
Yes, there you go. Correction. You could say rebukes. Indignation. Yeah, y'all are gonna get a spell check is a good thing. What else?
Prophecy.
Okay, good. Maybe. What else? Prophecy. Can you give me an example?
Kept foretelling his death.
Okay.
Even though they weren't hearing it.
Mm-hmm. Destroy the temple, and I will rebuild it in 3 days. What did he tell Peter? Mm-hmm. Peter says, I'll die with you, Lord. He said, you're going to deny me 3 times before 24 hours is up. And it happened.
Would parables be a separate thing or be part of teaching?
That would probably be teaching, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How about just keeping the law? Obeying the law?
Obedience?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Not only to the law, but also to his
father. Mm-hmm. Obedience. Okay. Yeah, very important. All these are very important. And in fact, if he didn't do some of them, that would sort of cause the rest of them to collapse. If he was really the high priest, he would have to be in prayer for his people. If he wasn't, well, is he really the high priest? And if he's not the high priest, you see what I'm saying? They're dependent on each other. Anything else? We don't have to list everything, but...
Compassion?
Definitely.
I would think in the category of correction and miracles would come up with the category of teaching. It was always a dynamic.
Yes, probably. There's positive teaching and negative, right?
Yeah.
For sure. Yes, Lydia? Okay, yeah, we did have that as it related to indignation, but I mean, that would kind of be in obedience too, right? Okay. Good. Okay, so think about those things. Look at them all now. Think about each one. And think about how that makes you think about Jesus. Okay? And now turn to Mark, the Gospel of Mark, chapter 8. And we'll read from verse 31 to 38. Mark 8, 31 through 38. Leah, would you read that for us?
Whoever will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whosoever will save his life will lose it, but whosoever will lose his life for my sake and the gospel's, the same shall save it. How far do you
38.
For what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? Whosoever therefore shall be ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him also shall the Son of Man be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father and the holy angels.
Okay, thank you. Let's focus on 34 through 38. Calling the crowd to him with his disciples, Jesus said, "If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me." So what we read the context a little bit before, right? Jesus told Peter that it's God's will for me to go to the cross. And Peter has to follow him in that suffering too, right? If he's going to take up his own cross. If we think about taking up our own cross, you are not likely to be crucified, actually crucified. Right? If that were to happen, the world as we know it has changed big time. But we do have to carry the cross as it relates to fighting against sin and ruined reputations, lost riches, dishonor, discomforts, family trials, lost friendships, lost lands. There are many people that for following Christ have suffered many, many things, different aspects, and they're taking up their cross. They're following Jesus. And part of the way that you do that is you come out from the world and be separate. That's when you think about the holiness of God, and God says, be holy because I'm holy. Well, one of the main definitions of holy is separate, different, not normal, different. Okay, 35, Jesus says, whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake in the gospel will save it. Now, this is kind of weird, isn't it? If you give up your life, you save it. But if you try to save it and you hold on to it too tightly, you'll lose it. Well, that's counter to what normally is true, right? If you want to protect something, you hold on to it very tightly. Jesus says, when we give up our lives for the sake of Christ, we find life. Real life. True life. And if we refuse to give up our lives for Christ, listen, then we lose them forever. Then they're lost forever. And then, listen, Jesus further emphasizes the point. What does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? What can a man give in return for his soul? So, Mr. Doyle, if you were to set up an accounting sheet and you put down all the things that he's gained, the whole world on one side of the ledger, and on the other, the soul, there's not profit on that sheet. There's loss on the sheet. Even though on the one side is every single thing in the entire world. And not just possessions. Fame, admiration, whatever it is that people value on the earth. Sense of purpose and meaning that they gain from their jobs. All of that, if they gained all of that but lost their soul, they've lost. It was a bad choice. This is what Jesus said. If you gained everything, money, reputation, power, land. You know, the old farmer, land is also addictive. And the old farmer's, you know, the joke is, oh Lord, bless my little land. I don't want much. Just bless my little land and whatever land touches mine. You always want more and more and more and more without thinking about God, right? Jesus, really, if you think about it, what is he teaching about the value of the soul? If you gained the whole world, but you forfeited your soul in order to get it, that was a bad deal. The soul is more valuable than that. How valuable is it? More valuable than anything else, according to Jesus. Okay, 38. Whoever is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him will the Son of Man also be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels. Now listen, Jesus is teaching about the great danger of being ashamed of Christ. He teaches that if you're ashamed of Christ, he'll be ashamed of you. And similarly, in Matthew chapter 10, Jesus says, whoever denies me before men, I will deny them before my Father. How heavy is that statement? If you deny me when you stand before my Father, I'll deny you. I don't know him. That is a fearful thing. If you stand before the Father without Jesus, it's going to end in wrath. Okay, so this is the point that I want us to focus on today. Whoever is ashamed of me and my words, in this, imagine Jesus saying this, in this adulterous and sinful generation, you're ashamed of me? You should be ashamed at everything that you're seeing going on. You're ashamed at me in this sinful generation? Okay, well, let's think about it. Why would somebody be ashamed of Jesus and his word? Would they be ashamed of him because of his great power to heal the sick? As we've written down all these things? Would they be ashamed of his power to walk on water and calm storms? Certainly not. Would you be ashamed, or would somebody be ashamed because he raises people from the dead? Certainly not. Well, because he heals the blind or the deaf or the paralyzed, would you be ashamed of him because of that? Or because he casts out people who are afflicted by demon possession? Certainly we wouldn't be ashamed of him for that. What about his great love for sinners, like we put up here, compassion? He gave his life for them. He loved them so much. Would we be ashamed of him because he loved us so much? Or because he's completely holy? Is that something to admire him about or to be ashamed about? Would somebody be ashamed of his goodness? How, you know, Edward taught a couple weeks ago how Jesus loved little children. And when most teachers would say, get these kids out of here, they're annoying, Jesus said, no, let them come to me. Would we be ashamed because he promised to send the Holy Spirit to live with his people? Certainly not. Would we be ashamed because he prays for us all the time? You see the ridiculousness of what's happening right now? These aren't reasons to be ashamed of Jesus. The works of Jesus are praiseworthy. Would we be ashamed of him because of his great wisdom, his perfect justice? Or perhaps people would be ashamed of him because of his humble birth in a manger? Because he ate and drank with tax collectors and sinners? Because he refused to bow to tradition? Because he said, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you. Is that something to be ashamed of him about? Or is that admirable? We wish we could be more like him in that. Or were people ashamed of him because he did not overthrow the Romans? Because he didn't have a good place to sleep at night? You remember this? One man said, teacher, I'll follow you wherever you go. Jesus said, foxes have a hole and a bird has a nest, but I don't have anywhere to sleep at night. Right? Foxes have holes, birds have nests. The Son of Man has no place to lay his head. You really want to follow me? I'm basically homeless. And then Jesus could see if he really wanted to follow him. Because there would be costs, right? You'd have to deny yourself. You'd have to take up your cross. And you'd have to follow a path that's not easy. But it is the only path to salvation. Well, let's think about this some more. Would people be ashamed because the neighbors hate them because they follow Jesus? In the United States right now, we're in a weird spot. We know that people who actually are seeking to follow Jesus, the percentage is not very high. But there's a large percentage of people would say, oh yeah, I'm Christian. And if you're Christian, they don't care, whatever. But it's not so in other countries. And it happens here too, but in other countries where Christianity is not the majority, you know, Cambodia, it's less than 2% Christian. So 98 out of every 100 people are Buddhist. And when they convert, the neighbors don't like them. Is that something to be ashamed about Jesus for? Or because the world thinks you're stupid and foolish? You believe he rose from the dead? It can't happen. But this is what the scriptures teach, and it's what we believe. Or maybe people are ashamed of Jesus because they fear they'll lose their jobs. Or because their friends will stop loving them. You know, if you've been a Christian for some time, you have Christian friends, mostly. At least your closest. That should be the goal. But when people are first converted to Christianity, often their friends are not Christians. And that creates a bad situation or a difficult situation. You have people who are living for God and people who aren't. Can they walk together? Will the good morals of the Christian raise the behavior of the non-Christian, or will bad company corrupt good morals? Sometimes people might be ashamed because their husband or their wife is not a believer. They fear that they will divorce them, or that parents will disown the child. This happens many times in Muslim countries and Buddhist countries. The family cannot accept this change. Or perhaps people would be ashamed because fear of physical violence to their persons. You're a Christian? No, I'm not a Christian. But they actually are. They're just fearful of being assaulted. Jesus said, if you deny me before men, I will deny you before my Father. Well, what do you think? Should we be ashamed of the works of Jesus? And if not, are you ashamed of Jesus? It's obviously, it can be a problem because Jesus taught it. Whoever's ashamed of me, I'll be ashamed of them. And the context is self-denial, following Christ even to the point of bearing a cross and following him. These things are not reasons to be ashamed. I would submit to you, most of the shame that we have is not because of Christ, but because of us. Am I ashamed of the way I think sometimes? Yes, I am. Am I ashamed of the way I act sometimes? Yes, I am. Not the way Jesus acts, the way I act. But even more reason to cling closer to him, to follow more closely to him. We know already we can't do it. This is the good news. Jesus is helping. He's teaching us. He's leading us. He'll send forth the counselor to live inside of us. And it's a beautiful thing. And listen, if some of those things that I read that have to do with people outside of you are happening to you, take heart. Jesus said, if you were of the world would love you as its own. But because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. So we should not try to be offensive, but the gospel offends. If Jesus said, unless you come to me, you will perish, and the person will not come, it's offensive. And that's okay for us to teach the truth. We don't need to be offensive because we just want to be offensive. I think that's sinful. 1 Peter 4:16, if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in that name. You're suffering because you're a Christian? Glorify God. If there's any good reason to suffer, suffering for being a Christ follower is the best reason. Glorify God in that situation. Any comments or questions?
Until Jesus' time, pretty much the authority for his disciples had been the priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
And we see Jesus defying, opposing the priesthood. I suppose ashamed to be a part of it, but embarrassed maybe, or he's different, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of fear of reputation. You hanging around that guy, and he's fighting against the leaders. We see that some. I'm not going to press this too much, but Nicodemus, the Bible says, went to Jesus at night. I don't know if that means, I know people say it does, but I don't think the text supports it. That he was embarrassed and wanted to go out secretly. Maybe he was busy working all day and he went at night to see Jesus because he had time then. I'm not saying it wasn't that he wasn't ashamed. Could be. But there are definitely some people who followed Jesus that weren't super open about it because the fear of or reputation or anything. Yeah. Or fear that their parents would disapprove. You know, Jesus taught on that. He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. If you gain the whole world, the love and respect and admiration of your parents, they say, I'm so proud of you, Michael. You've grown up into a lovely man. You love your wife. You have a beautiful family. I'm so proud of you. But in seeking that from them, you forfeit your soul. You've lost. It's not worth it. Even that's desirable for us. What else? Anything else?
That made me think of the execution of all Christians in Syria and Afghanistan. They weren't ashamed. There isn't a single Christian in Syria now. Won't be executed.
Have you seen this magazine called Voice of the Martyrs? It's sad and also good to know what's going on and to pray. In many ways, we don't realize how good we have it. You might have a coworker who says, you're a Christian, you're stupid. Not likely to hit you on the head with a hammer.
For now.
I'm just saying, at this moment, we don't realize how good we have it compared to around the world. But I think that's our opportunity to pray for them. We're not being afflicted that way, and we can pray. And God knows. You know, there's affliction that's happening to Christians in countries we've never heard of and don't even know how to pronounce. But God knows. Well, let's have a word of prayer and then we'll have some fellowship time. Grady, would you lead us in prayer, please?